It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night continuing on until 7 o'clock right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. And also, you can find us on the 101.3 ESPN app. All you have to do is go to the Google Play Store or the iTunes Store. You can listen to us always streaming there 24-7, full access to our website content through that as well. And if you're using an Amazon Echo or you have Alexa, just ask her, Alexa, stream WCPV, and then we'll pop on as well. So we are up until 7 o'clock today, Red Sox baseball, 9:20. The pregame coverage starts as they take on the Angels again in Anaheim. We're here till 7, broadcasting live at the UPS store from the North Avenue Shopping Plaza in Burlington. And look, it's a first for me. It is an absolute first for me to be broadcasting from a UPS store. But it has been fun. The people have been great. They treated us to a bunch of food. There's still some left. We had pizza. We've had fruits and vegetables. I come to UPS, I don't think of getting dinner. We've got that. But that's just the kind of business that they're willing to do for you here. UPS store is your one-stop shop for small businesses. It's locally owned and operated. And as we continue to go through this whole buy local, support local phenomenon, and we do it very well here in Vermont and Northern New York, whether it's your beer or whether it's your vegetables, it's all about local. And here they are, locally owned and operated. You can ask them about their pack and ship guarantee, which covers U.S. Postal Service, DHL, and UPS. And they do full service digital color and black and white printing. So we are here until 7 o'clock. Aaron's back in the studio, man of the ship, as for what's coming up on the show today. We'll get to Josh McDaniels and the Patriots at some point. Something has happened to the Yankees that has confirmed what I have been saying all along. Taylor Ward, who covers the Angels, he will join us at 6:20. And then some thoughts on Dave Dombrowski of the Red Sox. But first, the Red Sox beat Ohtani last night, but I don't even feel like the Red Sox beat Ohtani because Shohei Ohtani beat Shohei Ohtani himself last night. I feel like we were robbed of seeing a potentially great pitching matchup. I wanted to see Shohei Ohtani at his best going up against David Price at his best, the two best teams in baseball in the early going. We were robbed of all of that. And whether we were robbed of it because of Shohei Ohtani's blister, whether we were robbed of it because of Shohei Ohtani's nerves, or simply put, his ineffectiveness, we were robbed of seeing Shohei Ohtani at his best. And I feel bad because a lot of the baseball fans up here are going to check out on Ohtani until he faces the Yankees or until he faces the Red Sox again. And I feel bad for that because I still think that Ohtani is one of the most interesting stories in baseball right now. He's one of the most interesting stories in sports right now. Again, nobody's doing what he's doing, but Ohtani beat himself yesterday. The Red Sox did not beat Ohtani. You couldn't even get an opportunity to fairly judge if the Red Sox beat Ohtani. Because, as we told you yesterday, Ohtani gets ahead in counts. Well, he didn't do that yesterday. He only threw 4 first-pitch strikes out of 12 batters. 12 batters faced, 4 first-pitch strikes. When you're behind everybody, you can't win. You can't win consistently, and you can't beat teams that were coming into that game at 13-2. If you can't get ahead in the count as a pitcher, then chances are you are severely limiting your opportunity for success. Continuing on. So now Ohtani can't get ahead. Okay, fine. He fights back in counts. But then he couldn't put you away. He had struck out 18 batters in his first 2 starts against the A's. He couldn't get anybody yesterday for the most part. He did strike out J.D. Martinez in the first, but that splitter that has been so devastating for Shohei Ohtani, he didn't have it yesterday. He didn't have his slider. He didn't have his curveball. He threw 29 off-speed pitches yesterday, and he only threw 10 strikes. 10 strikes out of 29 pitches. 10 strikes, 19 balls on his off-speed stuff. And I don't care if you're Shohei Ohtani, Max Scherzer, or an 8th grader on the modified team at your local high school, if you can't get ahead in counts and you can't put people away, and you can't throw your off-speed stuff, you almost have zero chance. You almost have zero opportunity for success. Hitters are too good. Shohei Ohtani throws 97 miles an hour. 97 miles an hour when it's behind in the count, and 97 miles an hour when it has no other competition in your mind as to what the pitch might be. Right there, I've already won as the offense. And you saw that. Mookie Betts homered off Ohtani. And then he homered two more times in that game too. But Ohtani yesterday, we talk about, you know, getting strikeouts. Ohtani had just three swings and misses yesterday. Get that. Three swings and misses. 27 times the Red Sox swung yesterday against Ohtani. Only three did they swing and miss at. He's got 47% of the balls that were swung at in his first two starts were swung and missed. 47% swing and miss rate in his first two starts, 11% yesterday. The Red Sox didn't beat Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani beat Shohei Ohtani. And I feel bad that now a lot of people are going to just simply cast him aside and say, oh, he's not that good. Oh, I'm glad he's not here. Oh, call me when he pitches against the Yankees. Oh, we can't beat the good team. Oh, Japanese pitchers aren't as good when they come over as they were in Japan. All of those things people can say now, I feel bad, because Shohei Ohtani is good. But Shohei Ohtani is a 23-year-old guy pitching in the major leagues for the first time. You know what? When other 23-year-old pitchers playing in the major leagues for the first time do that, can't throw first-pitch strikes, can't throw off-speed stuff, they get the same results as Shohei Ohtani got yesterday. It's Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Going up until 7 o'clock, we will have the Red Sox lineup for you before the show ends. The Red Sox have put out their lineup recently, and there is an interesting twist in that Red Sox lineup today. We'll get that to you at about 6:50. We're 10 minutes away from Taylor Ward joining us, who covers the Angels and watched that game last night. The news on Tom Brady is this, and Aaron, get ready with some of the Adam Schefter cuts back in the studio, but Tom Brady has not told the Patriots that he is 100% playing this year. Adam Schefter, ESPN NFL Insider, he shed some light on that on Get Up, the new program that airs on television, the new morning sports show that Mike Greenberg, Michelle Beadle, and Jalen Rose are a big part of and are the leaders of that show. Adam Schefter on that show today talking about Brady and his situation. Aaron, give us number three.
The Patriots are still awaiting official word from Tom Brady about his future, but there's been no official word that Tom Brady will be back for the 2018 season. He has not yet committed to playing, and I think the people around him and the people inside that organization think that he'll play, but they don't know that he will play, and that question lingers as the draft approaches next week.
Tom Brady's going to play, but if Tom Brady were ever waffling about playing, it remains the same story to me that I felt for a year. Yes, there are issues, I believe, between Brady and Belichick, but that's not what would cause Tom Brady to stop playing. There's one person behind this. There's one person behind any doubt, and that is his wife. That is Gisele Bündchen. And I am sorry to speculate on another man and woman's relationship. I am not TMZ. I am not The Enquirer. I am not People Magazine. I do not care to speculate on other people's relationships. But Gisele has repeatedly said that she does not want him playing football. So I find it very odd that this week Tom Brady doesn't show up at voluntary minicamps for the first time in 8 years. And I find it very odd that today we're hearing about Brady not necessarily being all in. And I find it very hard to believe that the two are not correlated, that Brady's not showing up and that Brady's wife is the reason why. Gisele appears to be an amazing woman. From all I've heard about her, she's a great mother. She's a great philanthropist. She appears to be a good person. She is not the first woman nor the first man that would like more time with their significant other. But Gisele has been so gung-ho about wanting Tom Brady's time and wanting him out of football, whether it's she wants him to be safe, whether she wants him to be available whatever it is, she does not want him playing football. And I find it hard to believe that this is about, that any doubt about Tom Brady's future, I find it hard to believe that it's not about Giselle. The issues between Brady and Belichick, I'm sure they have been there for some degree of time in the last 18 years. What's new is the full court press being put on by Giselle to get Brady out of football and to get Brady at home more, to get him being more of a dad, more of a husband, more of the dad and husband that she wants. Tom E. Curran, he covers the Patriots for NBC Sports Boston, and he's really good at it, and he's really informed about it. When we first heard that Gronk had been unhappy for a lot of this season, we heard that from Tom E. Curran of NBC Sports Boston. So it was very telling today when Tom E. Curran put out a tweet that had a picture, and it had no words, there was no caption, there was no emoji, there was one tweet with one picture, and that picture was John Lennon and Yoko Ono, a.k.a. the significant other that tries to get in the way of the star and ultimately removes the star from what made the star the star. Giselle would prefer Tom Brady not play football. That's out. She said she doesn't want him to play. She wants more time at home. Tom versus time, the Brady family controlled the narrative, and they told us that. They told us when they had control of the narrative, Giselle said, I want more time with him. He said, it's going to be about my family. So I do think it's a big deal that when Tom Brady doesn't show up this week, I think it's a very real possibility that his wife is the reason, his wife is in his ear about it. And again, she would not be the first wife or the first husband that would try to get in the way of her significant other's career. But for all the issues about Belichick, and I think there are real issues between Gronk and Belichick, we heard Danny Amendola speak harshly about Bill Belichick. We heard Nate Solder speak harshly about the Patriots, and honestly, we heard Deion Lewis say he wanted to go somewhere he was wanted. I think there's a very real kind of sea change going on in Foxborough where people have shown they are unhappy with Bill Belichick and with the Patriot way and the Patriot system. And I believe Tom Brady is upset with things too. But I think this is much more about who he goes home with and who he goes home to rather than who he goes to work to. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We are live at the UPS store, North Avenue in Burlington. They usually stay open until 6:30. They are staying open until 7 today just for us. Just for us, just for me. Yesterday was tax day. Today is also tax day because of the extension. You need your documents shredded. They'll do it for free as long as it's 5 pounds or less. As long as it's 5 pounds or less. Angels, Red Sox, yesterday it didn't live up to the hype. 10-1 in favor of the Sox. What can we expect tonight? We'll go out to Anaheim next. Taylor Ward, he'll join us. He covers the Angels, and he's live on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back, Champlain Valley Game Night, right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Go all the way up until 7 o'clock today. Red Sox baseball against the Angels. Game 2 of that series pregame show starts at 9:20. And yesterday's game 1 of that series was supposed to be awesome, and it really underwhelmed. Ohtani struggled through 2 innings. The Sox blew him out 10-1. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves Taylor Ward, who covers the Angels out west. Taylor, how are you?
I'm all right. How about you, buddy?
I'm good as well. Was yesterday more about Ohtani's struggles individually, or was it about the Red Sox causing Ohtani to struggle?
I think it was a pair. It was both. I think we found out later that Ohtani had the blister between his index and middle finger, which obviously affected his splitter. He had zero feel for his splitter. As you could see, he was constantly overthrowing it and just couldn't get a good feel for it. But you can't understate what the Red Sox did. I mean, Mookie Betts, the fastball that he hit for the leadoff home run was a pretty good pitch. You're talking about a 23-year-old rookie that's going against the first, not to take anything away from the Oakland A's, but the Red Sox lineup is much different from the A's. And, you can contribute a lot of it to what the Red Sox did to him, but you also have to be cognizant of the blister. And it's a rookie that can't find a way other than his fastball to really record outs.
What is Ohtani mania like out there in Southern California? Because the people over here are like, it's nothing because he's not a Red Sox or a Yankees player. But what is it like out there?
It's insane. I mean, we haven't seen anything like it for some time. Even when Trout was doing what he was doing at a peak level, it's triple what you would get for a national audience for Mike Trout. It's really insane to see, you have 200 members of the media pretty regularly at Angel Stadium now. If Shohei Ohtani is hitting or if he's pitching, especially if he's pitching, yesterday obviously it had national attention, local attention, and of course, Japanese attention as well.
Now, what's Ohtani's temperament? He didn't show any emotion on the mound yesterday. I don't hear him talk an awful lot. Is he accessible? What's it like for him individually?
When it comes to getting him in with the press, it's times that are set aside. No one talks to him pregame, and you're only getting postgame comments from him. Sometimes it kind of starts with the local writers, the beat writers, and the local writers do a translation with his translator, and then the Japanese media gets a few minutes with him after that. But he seems to be a fine character. You know, when he came into town, his first words were, "Hi, I'm Shohei Ohtani." That's how he introduced himself, yeah. And that's kind of the character that we've gotten. He's pretty par with where he's always been.
I am a diehard Seattle Mariners fan, have been my whole life. I allowed myself into thinking Ohtani was going to be a Mariner. Why did he choose the Angels? Because that kind of came, maybe not out of nowhere, but it definitely wasn't the first team on most people's list.
To this day, we still don't have an answer as to why he picked the Angels, other than he felt it was the best fit. That's what he's told us. That's what we've been told. I feel like everyone that I've spoken to has said Billy Epler, the general manager of the Angels, is the one that really sealed the deal to get Ohtani there. We only have so much information on what happened in those meetings. I thought the Mariners were front runners as well, along with the Yankees, Red Sox, and Dodgers.
Taylor Ward covers the Angels out west, and he's here with us on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. This Angels team, despite yesterday's shellacking at the hands of the Red Sox, is off to a great start, 13-4, if I'm not mistaken, in the front runners in the AL West at the moment. How have they done it as a whole collectively?
Offense, and it's a much improved offense. Even though Ian Kinsler's been out for the majority of the season with a groin injury, Zach Cozart has really turned this lineup into a more offensive prowess team. You have Mike Trout, who isn't doing Mike Trout things right now, but you have a healthy Albert Pujols, you have Justin Upton. It's a just entirely different team from the past couple years, and this offense has really been the carrying tool. They're scoring upwards of 6-7 runs a game. Obviously, last night wasn't the same case. David Price pitched a heck of a game. But the pitching has kind of helped a little bit. You have good starts from Garrett Richards, Tyler Skaggs, Shohei Ohtani, but the offense is definitely the carrying tool at this point. So if you get the starting pitching to kind of carry them a little more in this offense, they're going to tail off a little bit. But if they can stay consistent enough, then yeah, this team is going to be pretty dangerous.
You know, it's amazing. You take Ohtani out of it because we understand how old he is and the little amount of money that he makes playing at the major league minimum right now. But the Angels have kind of done this kind of backwards way of that we think now. We think now to get good, you have to get young, get controllable assets, and have them all on cheap contracts and try to win like the Royals did and try to win like the Astros did. The Angels have said, we'll take your aging veteran like Justin Upton and pay him massive money. We'll take your expiring contract guy like Ian Kinsler and Zach Cozart, and we're going to try to make it work this way. That's different than popular opinion, I think.
Yeah, and when Billy Epler came in, that was the state of the organization, is you kind of had to go that way because your farm system wasn't going to help you do that. He's been able to make a lot of waiver claim trades that have turned out well with Parker Bridwell, J.C. Ramirez. Obviously, Parker Bridwell starting the year down in AAA. J.C. Ramirez has Tommy John in the future here. But he had guys like Albert Pujols, the contract was already in place. you have to find ways to part with Josh Hamilton and C.J. Wilson money. And Billy has really put a focus in on bringing the amateur talent into the system. It's a lot of it is still in the low minors, but they're still looking towards having this team come from the bottom and work its way up in an Angels way. And the players he's targeted have been Mike Socha-esque players, you know, Justin Upton, Zach Cozart. But for the time, as you noted, with Seattle and Jerry DePoto, DePoto kind of put in play a win-now mentality. And Artie Moreno, the owner of the Angels, was very in on that, still is. So Artie Moreno is always going to put this team in a winning position. And right now, that was the only way that they were capable of doing so. But in the next 5 to 6 years, you may see a different trend with the Angels.
You know, you talk about Mike Socha being the manager of the Angels, longest tenured manager in the majors right now. And up here, we've got the longest tenured football coach in the NFL in Bill Belichick. Now, he's won 5 Super Bowls. That's how he's got his job for so long. Socha's been at the helm of a team, won a World Series back in 2002, but hasn't done a whole lot since then. How is Mike Socha perceived in Southern California?
It depends on if you're asking the fan base or if you're asking the organization, because the fan base is really, it seems they're tired of him. It seems that they don't see what he's been able to do, but the players and the organization absolutely love him. All the players would stand tall for him, but definitely there's a calling for the fan base. He's in his contract year, so this is a big year for Mike Socha to find out what his future is in Anaheim or for baseball, because he's like you said, longest tenured manager. He's been managing for upwards of 20 years here. So we don't know what the future for Mike Socha really leads to, but the organization definitely is fine with having Mike Socha at the helm.
Taylor Ward covers the Angels. He's here with us on Champlain Valley Game Night on a Wednesday, 101.3 ESPN. Game 2 of the series pregame show, 9:20 tonight. Pitching matchup is Rick Porcello against Tyler Skaggs. Tyler Skaggs, a lefty, not a lot of Boston fans probably are too aware of, had a really good year so far. What can we expect tonight out of the lefty?
It's finding the groove for him. If he gets in a groove, he's going to be very good. That's been a problem for him throughout the years, is his command can come and go, and if he doesn't have command of his fastball, it's really going to be a struggle. A lot of two-strike curveballs, and it's a very, very good curveball. The fastball is going to sit about 90 to 94. One of those guys that was a top prospect, that's now he's still only 25, 26 years old, so he's still young, but he's going to have to show that he is that mid-rotation arm for you. If you want to really see what Tyler Skaggs is about, I think it's going to be an interesting night. This Red Sox lineup is really fun to watch. So going up against Tyler Skaggs, who, if he has his command down, it's going to be really fun to watch them battle against each other.
Taylor, I've never been, you know, a huge believer in out in Southern California. Well, there's so many things going on, you have to just compete for the headlines, but maybe that is the case. Where does the Angels and Ohtani mania right now rank against the Dodgers, Lonzo Ball mania, the Rams and all the moves they're making? Where do the Angels rank right now?
Well, I can tell you what, I know a lot of people ignored the LA Kings game last night.
Yeah.
And the, you know, that quite a bit. The Kings had a playoff game and it wasn't even well watched. Ohtani mania.
We'll get you out of here. Last question. The very first time we ever spoke, you were covering Tim Tebow's first ever workout. And when he first hit batting practice, he eventually signs with the Mets. Are you amazed to see Tebow still playing 2 years after we talked last?
No, I when we talked last, I said high A, double A is they're going to give him a couple years, and obviously we can see that he's not a major league talent, but they're probably going to get him in a major league game just for giggles.
Taylor Ward, we appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Taylor Ward, there he goes, covers the Los Angeles Angels. We appreciate the time. Yeah, hard to believe it's been 2 years since I spoke to him. It's been 2 years practically since we started with the Tim Tebow playing baseball, even rumors. And Taylor Ward was out at his very first batting practice where he hit a bunch of home runs, and it was out in California, and he was there. So that was the first time that they ever got to talk to him. We break down the Angels tonight. Angels, Red Sox, 9:20 right here on 101.3 ESPN. And as good as Tyler Skaggs has been, the one thing that Taylor said is that he's going to throw a lot of fastballs, and he's going to throw a lot of curveballs, and he's left-handed. So those fastballs and then those curveballs are going to break inward to a righty. And when you look at Hanley Ramirez and J.D. Martinez and Mookie Betts and where kind of the bread is buttered for the Red Sox offensively, I really like that matchup for them. I like this team against lefties. And Hanley was dreadful against lefties last year. But if he can put up what typical righties do against lefties, then I'll continue to love them against left-handed pitchers. It was amazing, the one thing that we talked about with Taylor there, because it's not something that until we had him on a second ago that I'd really thought about. But the Angels, and to another degree the San Francisco Giants, they have bucked the trend of what we think about team building now. When we look at team building now, teams are getting away from the massive spends in free agency. And you look at, you guys said it, you guys that are Red Sox fans said, we don't want another David Price. We don't want to overpay for a guy who's going to break down and leave us with, you know, 8-year deal that of which we only get 3 years worth of good production out of. You guys said that. You did not want big free agent players on the team, and you liked the creative deal with which JD Martinez got, because it doesn't hamstring you forever in a way that Price, Pedroia, Pablo Sandoval, those deals do. So we have now been conditioned to go the complete other way. Develop from within. Develop your farm system. Bring up the young kids. Have a bunch of young kids that are inexpensive, and when they're ready to play and they're ready to be really good, then you strike with one or two big moves in the free agency, on the free agent market, and that's it. The Angels have gone the other way. Ohtani was their big move to get younger. But outside of him, Justin Upton, veteran, been in the league forever, played with the Diamondbacks, the Braves, the Padres, the Tigers. They go and get Zach Cozart, who's a free agent at the end of the year. They go and get Ian Kinsler, who has a big deal that the Tigers were looking to get rid of. They said, yeah, we'll take everybody because we're trying to win now. We're trying to win this way. It's not all about let's just be bad until we get the young kids here. They are doing it a different way. The Giants did that too. They could have sold off Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija and Mark Melanson, and they could have tanked it and got real bad and developed a farm system. But no, they doubled down and said, yeah, we'll trade for Evan Longoria, and we'll trade for Andrew McCutchen, and we will be okay being older and trying to win that way. It's very, very interesting when we talk about how teams look at team building. Champlain Valley Game Night right here, 101.3 ESPN, live from the UPS store, North Ave, the shopping plaza here in Burlington. The Yankees are proving what I have said all along. Bullpens are incredibly volatile, and they cannot be relied upon from year to year. I did not think that this was going to happen to the Yankees, and I know it's, quote, it's still early, but Tommy Canley's on the disabled list. He goes to the DL now, right shoulder tendonitis, 6.14 ERA in 6 appearances. Okay? He's walked 8 in 7 1/3 innings. Dylan Betances is 0-1 with an ERA of 7.82. He throws 99 miles an hour. He's got an ERA of 7.82. Bullpens are volatile. They cannot be counted on from year to year. And I said this over and over again, that I wanted the Red Sox to go out and acquire some big-name free agents to help that bullpen, because as good as the bullpen was last year, I don't know that you can count on Joe Kelly, Heath Embry, Matt Barnes, Craig Kimbrell to be as good as he was last year, and all of those things to work out. And we saw it on game one of the year. Bullpen imploded, and Red Sox blow a great start by Chris Sale, and they lose. Now, it's been good since then, but by and large, bullpens, they're just so wildly unpredictable. But Tansis has been awful, and I thought he was awful from the halfway point of last year. And I don't know that he writes the ship to be the all-star pitcher that he was a few years ago. 7.82 ERA early, and I know there's bad weather, but they've played, I mean, they played indoors in Toronto. They played the Marlins, who were supposed to be one of the worst teams in baseball history. The schedule has been in the Yankees' favor outside of the series in Boston. I mean, they've played Baltimore, who's awful at the moment, too. Canley was phenomenal last year when they got him from the White Sox. He was great. He's been terrible. And now he's injured. Betances was great for years. He's been terrible. I did not think the Yankees' bullpen could get bad. And to their credit, Chapman, David Robertson, Green, they're all good. They are good. But I thought they had a 5-headed monster out there, and right now they have a 3-headed monster. And we see this every year. A team that has a great bullpen one year doesn't necessarily have a great bullpen the next year, because that's just the way bullpens work. And that right there is why I wanted to see the Red Sox go for Brian Shaw, who signed in Colorado. It's why I wanted to see them go for Addison Reed, who left the Red Sox to go to the Twins. Because you just don't know. You just don't know what's going to happen year to year. And what's even more surprising about the Yankees is that everything that can go wrong has gone wrong for this team. Stanton has not adjusted well to New York. He's 3-for-35 at home in Yankee Stadium. He's hitting .086 at home. That's gone poorly. Then the bullpen, as I just told you, is 3/5 deep instead of 5/5 deep. The starting rotation has struggled. And that was the biggest question mark that we had. That was the one question we thought we had, and it's proven to be a question. Masahiro Tanaka, Sonny Gray each have ERAs over 6.5. That's not going to win a lot of games. 6.5 ERAs out of Sonny Gray and Masahiro Tanaka does not win you a lot of games. So, starting rotation's been bad. Bullpen hasn't been as good as we thought. Stanton's not hitting. Gary Sanchez has struggled at the plate. Neil Walker's been horrible at the plate. They've been injured with Jacoby Ellsbury and Brandon Drury, a move that I loved them making and getting Drury. Miguel Andujar hasn't performed. He homered the other night, but he hasn't. He homered yesterday, but he hasn't performed like he did in spring training as a top prospect call up. Clint Frazier's been injured. It just hasn't gone. It's everything that could go bad for the Yankees has. They're still 8-8, and there's still a lot of time left. But they're already 6 games behind the Red Sox. So it's something to be cognizant of, is that they just have not played well at the moment, and a lot of things have gone upside down for them. Champlain Valley Game Night Live, UPS Store, North Avenue Shopping Plaza in Burlington, 15 minutes away from giving you the Red Sox lineups against the Angels. And it is an interesting lineup that the Bo Sox have. But first, do we need to rethink our impressions of Dave Dombrowski with the Red Sox? I don't think so. We'll get into that next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Final segment from the UPS Store, North Avenue Shopping Center here in Burlington. They have treated us very, very well. They've given us food. They've given us pizza. They've given us fruits and vegetables. We had some great monster cookies. And there's a brewery down the street, Simple Roots Brewery. They came in and brought us some beer also. So what other place can you mail a package, have your documents shredded, get free pizza, and then get some beer as well? You can only do it at the UPS Store here at North Avenue in the Burlington Shopping Plaza. So it has been a lot of fun today, and we're going to be out at UPS in Essex next Wednesday over on Carmichael Street. So there's a little hint there, and I'm told there's going to be food and other fun things at that location as well. Red Sox are out to their best start in franchise history. A lot of people that we said needed to have some bounce-back years are having those bounce-back years in Hanley Ramirez and in Rick Porcello. And I saw this on Twitter yesterday, and people are asking, do we need, when you look at the success this team has had, and you look at the bounce-back year of David Price also, and you look at the hiring of Alex Cora, which so far appears to be a home run, do we need to rethink the way that we evaluate Dave Dombrowski with the Red Sox? And my answer is this. It's a fair question. The answer is no, not right now. Not right now do we need to reevaluate how we look at Dave Dombrowski's tenure in Boston. First off, Hanley Ramirez and Rick Porcello were not brought in by Dave Dombrowski. So I can't just say that those were negative moves that have become positive moves again. Those were not Dave Dombrowski moves. Okay? Those were not Dave Dombrowski moves. Those were moves brought in by other management. When I look at Dombrowski moves, I simply say this. Alex Cora, I thought was going to be great. He has been great. And that is true. 16 games in a spring training, Alex Cora has been great. That is a good move by Dave Dombrowski. Then I look at it and say, Chris Sale has been great. Chris Sale has been great. David Price, jury is out. So there are moves there that I like from Dave Dombrowski, but I can't totally reevaluate what I thought because I've never said that Dave Dombrowski is a bad general manager or president of baseball ops. What I've said is that I am weary of the direction that Dave Dombrowski has the franchise. Dave Dombrowski has all his eggs right now in the win now basket. A lot of money invested in J.D. Martinez, but it's not all long-term, but there's money invested in J.D. Martinez. There's a lot of money invested in David Price, and I think he's going to be good this year. But I don't think that for the duration of a seven-year deal, he's going to be great. I think that eventually is going to hurt the Red Sox. And that was handed out by Dave Dombrowski. He's traded away the top prospect in baseball in Yoan Moncada. And I understand Chris Sale is great, and I understand Moncada is young and struggling right now in Chicago. Tyler Thornburg has not thrown a pitch yet for the Red Sox, and Travis Shaw had an unbelievable year last year for Milwaukee when he was traded for Thornburg. Dave Dombrowski has gutted this team's farm system. And if you win a World Series, then maybe the fan base gives you the free pass on that. And heck, if the Mariners won a World Series and they haven't been to the playoffs in 18 years, I would give ownership a free pass. I don't care about the farm system. You get me the one World Series. And I have a feeling Red Sox fans are maybe not quite as grateful as I would be for one World Championship, but I have a feeling they're okay with that. Look at the Kansas City Royals. They're going through a rebuild. They won a World Series. I think their fans have to be okay with that rebuild. You know who's not? You know who's going through a rebuild that never won a World Series? The Detroit Tigers. And that's where Dave Dombrowski came from. Dave Dombrowski put all his eggs in the win now basket there. Justin Verlander, big deal. Miguel Cabrera, massive deal. Victor Martinez, massive deal. Justin Upton, massive deal. Prince Fielder, massive deal, if I'm not mistaken, under Dave Dombrowski. They made a ton of big, sexy moves in Detroit to try to win a World Series, and they didn't. And you know what they were left with? They're left with decaying former stars. Miguel Cabrera is a shell of himself. Victor Martinez can barely run, nevertheless play catcher what he came up as, or first base. Justin Upton is gone. Prince Fielder is retired and was traded to Texas. They had Ian Kinsler for big money there. Justin Verlander was traded also. So that team is in a massive rebuild, and it looks like a long process, and they didn't win a World Series. And my biggest fear for Red Sox Nation is that Dave Dombrowski has set this franchise on a course of where it is win now. Win within the next 2 years, or you don't get a chance to win again for a while. Because I understand how this works. Chris Sale needs big money next year. Or he's got this year and one more left on his deal. After next year, he needs huge money. He either leaves and gets his huge money somewhere else, and now you traded Moncada, who you could have had for years, and you didn't get Sale. You didn't win when Sale was here. So you essentially got nothing out of that deal other than some tweets that said happy Sale day every time we took them out. Chris Sale is going to want big money. If you give it to him, then he becomes like David Price and you're looking at a 30-something pitcher making huge money and you're mad about that. And he eats up your payroll for years. You've got David Price, who we think is going to decay again and for good. Craig Kimbrell, free agent end of the year. Do you give him big closer money like Aroldis Chapman got, or do you let him walk? Same thing. There's just not a young influx of talent coming in to rescue this organization when these guys leave. Or you end up with old players like Detroit has that eventually become shells of themselves, and you can't get out of it. Now, the Red Sox have great young players, Mookie Betts, Andrew Benintendi, Rafael Devers. Mookie Betts, he's going to want big money, and he's going to want it soon. Can you keep him, or does he eat up large portions of your payroll, a la Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez? So, things this year have worked out for Dave Dombrowski. Sale, good. Price, better. Cora looks great. And if you win in the next 2 years, then I will totally flip the script on how I think about Dave Dombrowski's tenure in Boston. But if you don't win the World Series, and Kimbrel leaves, and Sale leaves, and Price breaks down, and you're just left with holes in your roster from former superstars or you've paid former superstars that can no longer play at that level that they did, then you're going to look a lot closer to the Detroit Tigers that we see now that are really an embarrassment in the AL Central. It's Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. We'll get you those Red Sox lineups here in just a few moments here. Again, 9:20, the pregame show starts. Sox taking on the Angels. Tyler Skaggs is on the mound for Boston. Rick Porcello is on the mound for the Red Sox. And Porcello has been great. Real quick, on Josh McDaniels. If I'm Josh McDaniels and I look at the carnage going on now around the Patriots and the speculation going on around the Patriots, I am regretting my decision to come back and not take the Colts job. I already thought that McDaniels was a coward for backing out of the Colts job. I really felt that way. I thought it was the wrong way to handle things. And I know it's a business, and I know players get cut, and players get cut late in free agency, and I don't agree with that either. But I disagreed with Josh McDaniels holding the Colts hostage, basically, and then backing out at the 11th hour on that job. I disagreed with that. But now, to see what's going on in New England, I'd feel like I made a huge mistake if I were him. I thought he made a mistake months ago. When you look at the people are rushing to get out of New England. Nate Solder, Deion Lewis, Danny Amendola. They're openly telling you now about what's going on in New England and how it isn't all perfect. We know that Gronk is not happy. We know that Tom Brady, well, again, I think it's more about Giselle. We know that Brady and Belichick at least have had their battles this season. It's not a perfect situation. People are rushing to leave it. And Josh McDaniels is rushing into that situation. And if I'm him and I'm seeing all of this transpire, I'm starting to wonder if the foundation is fragmented in a big way. I am not saying the Patriots are about to go 6-10 and miss the playoffs. I don't think it's that dire. But I also think we're closer to the 6-10 Patriots than we are to the multi-time Super Bowl champions in, you know, 2 times in 3 years champions. It's the cracks are showing. It's not crumbling yet, but the cracks are showing. And if I'm Josh McDaniels, I'm wondering why I'm rushing back into it when everybody else is rushing to get away. Lineup for the Red Sox and the Angels. Rick Porcello's 3-0 with a 1.83 ERA. He's coming off a strong start as well. He has pitched very well this season. He's got 17 strikeouts on the year. Mookie Betts, 3 homers yesterday. He's got 5 on the year. He leads off and plays right. Hanley Ramirez in an unfamiliar spot. 1 at DH, 2 hitting second. JD Martinez is in left. He hits third. Mitch Moreland hits cleanup and plays first. Eduardo Nunez hits fifth and plays second. Rafael Devers is at third. He hits sixth. Sandy Leon is the catcher, hitting seventh. Jackie Bradley Jr., he hits eighth and plays center. And Su-Wei Lin, he hits ninth and plays shortstop. Switch hitting lineup out there for the Sox today. Righty heavy lineup as well as they try to get Nunez in and Martinez and Ramirez and Betts and Lin in there as well. For the Angels, Tyler Skaggs, 2-0 with a 1.69 ERA. Ian Kinsler leads off at second. Mike Trout's in center. Justin Upton is in left. Albert Pujols, the DH. Cole Calhoun's in right. Zach Cozart is at third. Luis Valbuena is at first. Andrelton Simmons is at short. And Martin Maldonado, he does the catching. That will do it for us. We've had an awesome day. The people here have been great. The UPS store, North Ave in Burlington, in the shopping plaza. It's your one-stop shop for small businesses. It is locally owned and operated. Offers U.S. Postal Service, DHL, and retail shipping rights, shipping rates. Ask about the pack and ship guarantee, which covers the U.S. Postal Service, DHL, and UPS, and it's full-service digital color and black and white printing. I messed up. Su-Wei Lin, left-handed. I had said right-handed in the lineup, but Su-Wei Lin is a lefty. We'll see you back in studio tomorrow, everybody. 101.3 ESPN.